Welcome to Tantra FM. Today we have no choice but to discuss some potentially harmful myths or misconceptions about male sexuality, myths and misconceptions that are already deeply rooted in our society. This way you will find out how to overcome them. We will then continue to guide you into the realm of meditation by revealing the importance of a pure mind. Afterwards, we shall elaborate some more on Chinamasta, the goddess of divine courage. At the end, we shall perform a meditation of communion with Chinamasta. Our yogi host Amaris and Valentino will also keep you company.
This is Tantra FM, the light that sets you free. I am your host, Valentino. Myths about men. Part 1. Here, we present you with some wrong and potentially harmful myths or misconceptions concerning male sexuality. Myths and misconceptions that are already deeply rooted in our mentality. Every culture is confronted with a large number of prejudices regarding various subjects, but without a doubt, most of them are from the sexual domain. Many of us absorb these beliefs relatively unconsciously. The conversations heard at home, the opinion of church personalities, of friends, teachers, the mass media, all of which contribute to the database of knowledge inherited from the social and cultural environment. But once we become capable to detect such myths, we will easily understand how they could hinder our relationships from becoming more harmonious. Bigger is better. Many men think that women like super huge penises, although there is no proof that this conception is true. Generally speaking, men have a complex that their penis is smaller and it should be a lot larger and so on and so forth. This thought generally comes into their minds because another man's penis, without being in erection, seems to be bigger than his. Many times this is an illusion caused by the decreasing effect that occurs when we are looking from up to down. Besides this, there is also a belief that the penis must be as hard as a stone and remain in full erection for hours. This is a dangerous myth because if the man does not keep up his erection, women often worsen the situation by blaming and criticizing themselves. In this case, they consider that it is their fault because they are not sensual and attractive enough. Similarly, many women believe that all they have to do to excite a man is to get undressed and remain in a passive state, hoping that their lover's penis will joyfully enter them in full erection. However, clinical experiments show that the penis generally needs help, and a woman must actively contribute to exciting her man. Women tend to avoid this, having a false idea that her naked body is enough to determine a man's erection, and feels that to help him get an erection is degrading in some way. No means yes. According to this myth, women are always ready to make love, and although they say no, they really mean yes. Or in other words, if at first they don't want to make love, they will always end up making love anyway. Although this myth concerns women, it seriously affects a man's way of thinking and acting. Having an available woman in their mind, a woman who is always ready to make love with them, some men are often unsatisfied or discontent with the woman they live with. Such a man never pays attention when his lover sensually tells him, with her eyes and gestures, that she needs to be softly caressed by him, and not make love with him right now. In real life, this misunderstanding affects the couple's relationship, having other consequences too. Her no is often misinterpreted. He may think that it is because he cannot bring her to orgasm or that he isn't virile enough. Intuitive knowledge. It is also a myth that men should know what to do without needing to be told what to do. It is obviously false and destroys many relationships and marriages. In reality, men have more to learn about sexuality than women do, because women naturally have various erotic responses. Thus, no man can be sure that he will succeed in satisfying a woman if he doesn't ask her to tell him what she is expecting him to do in order to overwhelm her with pleasure. Paradoxically, the majority of women cannot bear the idea of sincerely saying what they want and feel, thinking that a man knows what her desires are, even if the man acts as if he doesn't know what she wants him to do. Women think that this subtle and refined knowledge must be instinctive. To make things even more absurd, many men try to give the impression that they know more about lovemaking than they really do. To resolve these misunderstandings, both partners should be open with one another. A woman must be very delicate when teaching her man, because he could consider this teaching a reproach. The invincible erection. It is not true that because a couple wishes and desires to make love, it will automatically bring the desired erection. Men need more stimulation as they get older. This fact can be a real problem for some women. She can be a little confused and tense when she has to contribute to her lover's erection, because until now she only had to play a passive role. She may consider this a deficit of her man, a sign that he doesn't love her anymore. It may even occur to her to look for another relationship to reconfirm her power of seduction. To understand the man's situation better, the man is excited, wanting to make love but unable to get an erection. If she compares this to a situation in which she is excited, but surprisingly her vagina isn't lubricated, she would understand him better. The difference is, of course, that it is possible to begin making love without a very lubricated vagina. Even if it is not so pleasant, the penetration can be improved with some external, natural lubricants. But it is almost impossible without the man having an erection. Myths about men, part 2. Non-manly feelings. We hear more and more talk about the perfect man, but he is still a rare jewel. Many men try to adapt themselves to the myth according to which men are strong, dominant, solar, and have a perfect control over their emotions. The smallest signs of compassion, tenderness, and gentleness are seen by some people as non-manly and non-sexy behavior. This myth is spread by women who want a virile Prince Charming as a lover. However, besides these many qualities they also want their lovers to have are to be understanding, gentle, and tender. The goal obsession. Since childhood, we have been learning to set up our goals in life and then to work hard in order to achieve them. When lovemaking is seen as a goal, then the prelude becomes insignificant and dull. Even if it is pleasant, and it is still considered as a simple step in reaching one's goal, which is intercourse. If you have goals and don't reach them, then your success is always hindered by nervousness and by the fear of failure. By encouraging a man to relax and to enjoy erotic play, the sensual woman can help him very much to feel pleasure without being limited by his goal. One of the most beautiful gifts a woman can offer a man is to help him eliminate certain pressures, teaching him happiness, communication, and intimacy during lovemaking, liberating him from striving for perfection. Any touch has only one mission. Medical researches regarding sexual therapy show that the majority of men consider touch as implicitly leading to intercourse. The Slurry-Hitty report comes to the conclusion that the majority of men limit lovemaking to penetration. This myth can be changed step by step by the sensual and persuasive behavior of a woman, who is able to make him understand that passionate embraces or massages can be done without necessarily being followed by intercourse. Such moments can often be more beautiful, warmer, and full of tenderness than actual intercourse. These moments are unique and can generate a deep intimacy between the lovers. Eroticism means copulation. When sexuality meant just having children, penetration was synonymous with the act of love. Yet, nowadays, when the majority of couples have maximum 2 or 3 children, erotic experiences are generally not made for procreation, but rather for pleasure and the ecstasy of love. Various studies highlight the fact that men of every age wrongly considered clitoris stimulation as not being a source of pleasure and happiness. Many men don't even know the location of a woman's clitoris. As long as men think that making love is just the penis entering into their lover's vagina until ejaculation is reached, there will always be unsatisfied and frustrated women. The majority of people, when asked, say that their first erotic experiences were not what they had envisaged. Some people have the feeling that lovemaking is somehow unnatural. Driven by this belief, many people spend their entire lives in a sterile search for the ideal person. Every love adventure brings new hopes that are often rapidly followed by disappointments. There are people that after getting married live tormented by the thought that somewhere out there is the ideal woman or ideal man for them. Although it is possible for magical and mystical lovemaking experiences to appear spontaneously, usually such erotic experiences only appear due to previous preparation, intimacy, and knowledge of another's sensuality. The intensity of pleasure increases with better knowledge of your lover and with increased mutual confidence. Mutual knowledge, real communication, and a profound understanding of the other's sexuality equally contribute to a wonderful and intimate life. So it is easy to see how the aforementioned myths can harm relationships. Having been warned about these myths, both lovers can do their best not to allow social norms and society's myths to confuse and interfere with the harmony, love, and intimacy that is possible to be attained in a couple. Meditation Guide, Purification of the Mind. You must have a pure mind if you want to realize the self. Unless the mind is set free and casts away all desires, cravings, worries, delusions, pride, lust, attachments, likes and dislikes, it cannot enter into the domain of supreme peace and unalloyed felicity of the immortal abode. The mind can be compared to a garden. Just as you can cultivate good flowers and fruits in a garden by plowing and manuring the land and removing the weeds and thorns and watering the plants and trees, so also you can cultivate the flower of devotion in the garden of your mind by removing the impurities of the mind such as lust, anger, greed, delusion, pride, etc., and watering it with divine thoughts. Weeds and thorns grow in the rainy season, but disappear in the summer. However, their seeds remain underneath the ground. As soon as there is a shower, the seeds again germinate and sprout out. Thus, the vrittis, or modifications of the mind, manifest on the surface of the conscious mind, and then disappear and assume a subtle seed-like state, in the form of samskaras or impressions. The samskaras again become vrittis, either through internal or external stimulus. When the garden is clean, when there are no weeds and thorns, you can get good fruits. So, also, when the mind is pure, when the mind is free from lust, anger, and so forth, you can have the good fruit of deep meditation. Therefore, cleanse the mind of its impurities first. Then the current of meditation will flow by itself. If you want to always keep your garden clean, you will have to remove not only the weeds and thorns and other small plants, but also the seeds that lie underneath the ground, which will germinate during any rainy season. Thus, you will have to destroy not only the big waves or vrittis of the mind, but also the samskaras, which are the seeds for births and deaths, which germinate the vrittis again and again. If you want to enter into samadhi and attain liberation or perfect freedom, you must do this. If you apply fire to green wood, it will not burn. But if you apply fire to a piece of dried wood, it will catch on fire and burn at once. Even so, those who have not purified their minds will not be able to start the fire of meditation. They will be sleeping or dreaming or building castles in the sky if they sit for meditation. But those who have removed the impurities of their minds through japa, service, charity, pranayama, etc., will enter into deep meditation as soon as they sit down for it. The pure and ripe mind will burn at once with the fire of meditation. If you do not clean or polish a plate daily, it will lose its luster. It is the same with the mind. The mind becomes impure if it is not kept clean by regular practice of meditation. Meditation removes the dross of the mind in an effective manner. Therefore, regularly practice meditation, preferably early in the morning. Do not cause pain or suffering to any living being from greed, selfishness, irritability, or annoyance. Give up anger or ill will. Give up the spirit of fighting and heated debates. Do not argue. If you quarrel with somebody or if you have a heated debate with anybody, you cannot meditate properly for the next 3 or 4 days. Your balance of mind will be upset. Much energy will be wasted in useless channels. Your blood will become hot. Your nerves will be shattered. You must try to keep a serene and peaceful mind at all times. A serene mind is a valuable spiritual asset for you. You must practice austerity of speech if you really want to attain quick progress in meditation. You must always speak sweet and loving words. You must speak only the truth at any cost, or you must not speak at all. You must not speak any harsh word or any indecent word that is calculated to hurt the feelings of others. You should weigh your words carefully before they are spoken. You must speak a few words only. This is known as austerity of speech or vak tapas. It will conserve energy and give you peace of mind and inner strength. Examine your character. Pick up the defects in it. Find out its opposite. Let us say that you suffer from irritability. The opposite of irritability is patience. Try to develop this virtue by meditating on the abstract virtue of patience. Regularly, every morning, sit down at 4 a.m. in Padma or Siddhasana, in a solitary room for about half an hour, and begin to think on patience, its value, its practice under provocation, taking one point every day, another on another day, and thinking as steadily as you can, recalling the mind when it wanders. Think of yourself as perfectly patient, a model of patience, and end it with a vow. This patience, which is my true self, I will feel and show today and always. For a few days, there probably won't be any change. You will still feel and show irritability. However, you must go on practicing steadily every morning. If you see an irritable thing, the thought of, "I should have been patient," will flash into your mind. Continue practicing. Soon the thought of patience will arise with the irritable impulse and the outer manifestation will be checked. Continue practicing. The irritable impulse will grow feebler and feebler until you find that irritability has disappeared and that patience has become your normal attitude towards annoyances. In this manner, you can develop various virtues such as sympathy, self-restraint, purity, humility, benevolence, nobility, generosity, etc. It is the actions of the mind that are truly termed karmas. True liberation results from the disenthrallment of the mind. Those who have freed themselves from the fluctuation of their minds come in possession of the supreme nishtha or meditation. Should the mind be purged of all its impurities, then it will become very calm, and all the samsaric delusions attendant with its births and deaths will soon be destroyed. Concentration of the mind on God after purification can give you real happiness and knowledge. You are born for this purpose only. You are carried away to external objects through raga and moha, but you must dive deeper. The divine flame, the light of lights, is burning there. Plunge deep and merge with it.
Hello and welcome to Tantra FM, your guide to sacred love. I'm your host, Amaris. At the time of death, the individual consciousness of the people who know all these things and who have practiced assiduously during their lifetime will come out of their body through Brahmaranda, the crown of the head, dissolving thus in the supreme source, which is God's universal consciousness. However, if this knowledge and if the ability to focus on Sushumna Nadi was not gained until the moment of death, then the consciousness of this person will come out of the body through a different nadi, and it will be integrated in one of the countless worlds of manifestation, according to the level of vibration and spiritual evolution. Therefore, the yogis worship with great frenzy the great cosmic power Chinamasta as the sacred goddess of transformation, acting mainly on the level of the third eye, and determining thus the transcendence of the hidden vision of the world. The selfless yogini in love. The great cosmic power Chinamasta is also considered to be Yoga Shakti, meaning the terrible force of action of yogi power,
which makes possible the association with Vajrayogini and with Para Dakini, the first and most important Dakini of the Tibetan tradition, the goddess that offers the sincere and devoted practitioner the greatest paranormal capacities. At the level of the energetic structure, the great cosmic power Chinnamasta acts mainly on Ajna Chakra, opening the third eye and symbolizing the light that offers the essential direct perception of the surrounding reality, that casts away the ignorance inherent to duality. Due to her association with the ascendant pranic flow of energy through Sushumna Nadi, the great cosmic power Chinnamasta is also correlated with Udana Vayu, the subtle energy causing the ascension of Kundalini Shakti and the deep transformation of the human being. Nonetheless, the great cosmic power Chinnamasta manifests at all levels when the yogi achieves an act of perception that goes beyond the normal condition. From the point of view of the iconographical representations, the great cosmic power Chinnamasta is represented as nude and headless. In her two hands, she holds her own head and a sword. The decapitated head drinks the blood coming out of her own open throat. Traditionally, the head is held in the right hand and the sword in the left. Her body is that of a 16-year-old girl. She wears a necklace made of human bones and a garland of human skulls. The great cosmic power Chinnamasta wears the sacred belt around her hips, and her breasts have the shape of lightning, being adorned with flowers and a single jewel attached to a snake in the area of the crown of the head. The goddess has three open eyes that radiate light. On her sides, there are two other goddesses whose names are Dakini and Varini. The great cosmic power Chinnamasta dances over the bodies of Kama, the god of love, and his wife Rati. In some traditional representations, in their places are Krishna and Radha. This iconographical representation of the great cosmic power Chinnamasta from the Hindu tradition is practically identical with that of the great goddess Vajradakini from the tradition of Tibetan Tantric Buddhism. There are in fact three streams of blood coming out from Chinnamasta's throat, a central stream that she herself drinks, and the other two placed on the left and on the right sides of this central stream, signifying the subtle energies from Ida Nadi and Pingala Nadi, and which are drunk by the two goddesses Dakini and Varini. The couple lying at her feet symbolize the union of the masculine and feminine energies of the human psyche. Chinnamasta's severed head represents the consciousness that was freed from the various limitations of the body and of the mind, while her lightning-shaped hair and radiant eyes are symbols of the direct perception of God's absolute consciousness. On the other hand, the sword she holds in her left hand signifies the discernment, Viveka, and the goddess's tongue symbolizes the colossal power of the divine logos, or of the mantras. As her representation is difficult to be rendered as a sculpture, the great cosmic power Chinnamasta is most often represented, as we describe her, in drawings and in paintings. Let us perform a meditation with the following theme: communion with the great cosmic force of divine courage, Chinnamasta. In order to help our concentration and to create a better resonance with the aspect we're meditating upon, we shall use proper musical support. Sit down on a chair with your spine straight, or assume a meditation pose such as Sukhasana, Vajrasana or Padmasana. For those of you that are still unfamiliar with these positions, you can learn about them on www.shivashakti.com. Make sure your spine, your neck, and your head are in an upward position, and they form a straight line. Relax your entire body. Empty your mind and acquire a strong inner focus. Do not allow anything to disturb your concentration at this point. Start breathing deeply and rhythmically. With each inhalation, imagine that you're bringing peace and harmony into your being. Also, with each exhalation, imagine that you're eliminating all tension, stress, and anything else that might disturb you right now. Now we're ready to begin. It is time to focus our mind and meditate upon the following aspect: communion with the great cosmic force of divine courage, Chinnamasta. Let us begin. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our broadcast. Have a nice day, everyone.